Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hello! And welcome to the SmackDown review. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by Michael Hafler from What Culture to review everything that happened on this week's episode of Friday Night SmackDown. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and YouTube, where we do daily wrestling podcasts where we're not only review SmackDown, but also Monday Night Raw, the show formerly known as NXT 2.0. AEW Dynamite, AEW Collision, pay-per-views, premium live events. We have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a roundup of the week complete with a mega quiz, of course, on wrestle culture. As I said, though, joined by Michael Hamflett on Google Meets today to review this Friday's episode of SmackDown. First of all, mate, how are you feeling?
Fine. Not that I sound it. I appreciate that. A bit of flu, and to be totally truthful, I am the sort of, and I'm a bad example to set here, I'm the sort of arsehole that would just kind of go into work anyway because I like farting around with you guys. However, this of all weeks feels one week to inadvertently infect friends. It's not the big bad wolf of illnesses or anything like that. It is just a cold. And obviously I'm talking like this. But if I went in and then, by sort of like Thursday, Friday, you guys were getting struck down with a cold with far less time between now and Philadelphia, I wouldn't be able to live with the guilt. So I'm going to keep my safe distance from yous until my voice basically doesn't sound like Madge from Neighbours. Like, once I've sort of returned, like, without, and as well, I should point out, I've got my cursor now hovering on the mute thing. So with any luck, I'll be able to, especially when I get enthusiastic, preserve the listeners from hearing my hacking horrible coughs. But if I have to stop a point halfway through, that's why, because it is just my vocal cords just tapping out, just giving in. SmackDown was good though, you know?
Yeah, it's going, obviously. Get well soon, mate. As you mentioned, 9 days until we fly for WrestleMania. And I thought, to make you feel a little bit better, I'd give you a present a little bit later on in the podcast. So stick around for that one. But let's dive straight into it. This highly anticipated episode of SmackDown that once again proves why myself and Michael Hamflett are some of the only respected journalists in this game. Because stick with us and you won't go far wrong. The show opened with a grudge feud. It was Rey Mysterio versus Santos Escobar. Prior to that, we'd seen, you know, all the important people arriving, and most importantly, Asuka not really limping when she showed up to this arena, which was good. We see Rey come down to the ring, and then we get a great video package reminding us of what's happened between the two of them. He took pity on Rey because Rey was his hero, but now he has no choice. He has to hurt Rey. And apparently the SmackDown GM, I forget what his name is, has banned everyone from ringside. No messing about. They get into it early on. Mysterio firing shots at Santos Escobar. He goes for this sort of springboard move, but he slips, kind of favours his knee as a result. But he's such a pro. It arguably seemed like it was part of the match if it was a mistake. So he fires up, sends Escobar to the floor, does that sliding splash of his to take us to a break early on. When we come back, Escobar's taken back over. He's talking trash to Rey, but Rey comes back with some strikes as a result of that. Escobar cuts him off, sends him into the corner, gets him in the tree of woe. But as Escobar charges, Rey Mysterio moves and Escobar sends himself into the ring post. Mysterio hits a crossbody to the outside off the big post thing, which looked like a rough landing for both of them, to be honest. They get back in. Mysterio basically hits a lion salt for a two count. Sets up for a 619, but Escobar comes back with a super kick. They spill to the outside. Mysterio cleans off the announce desk, but doesn't hit a move through it. Instead, seated sentons Escobar into the timekeeper's area. I was a bit worried for a split second we were going to get a count out at that point. But I should have been confident in our own excellent predicting skills, because he sends Escobar back inside. He's setting up for a big springboard move. He's going to be dropping the dime or whatever it is. Of course, I'm going to laugh so much. He started uncontrollably coughing. Anyway, he's going to drop the dime.
You can't be doing that to me, man. You can't drop it the dime.
But before he can do that, what can only be described, Hamlet, as a mystery figure appears, and we're all wondering, who could it possibly be? I believe Wade Barrett said, oh, it's Rey Mysterio. he distracts Rey. That allows Escobar to hit him with a 619 whilst he stood on the apron. Phantom driver, 1-2-3. Santos Escobar gets the win for Legado over the LWO leader. And the mysterious figure, in one of the most unnecessary unmaskings in wrestling history, pulls the mask off, the Mysterio esque mask, to reveal it's Dominic Mysterio. I mean, I hate to say we told you so, but we did tell you so, Hamlet.
Yeah. We gave everybody the finish, not just on Friday's preview, but for like what, the last 6 months?
Yeah.
So, it always felt like there was a link that was more of a dashed line than a thick one about how Santos, if you recall, had come into Rey's life as a supportive son-like figure when his actual son had turned on him and everything like that. So you always felt like there was a way to draw these loose narrative threads back together, and we got it. I also think this was realistically like good booking, because the match was decent.
Yeah.
I didn't think, like, watching it back, I don't think that you could have done a better job with it on the WrestleMania card. And for that reason, I think it's a good idea that they're doing whatever they're doing instead. Mm. So whether or not it's going to be a multi-man, whether or not it's going to be lumberjacks on either side, or, you know, like, just bells and whistles, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I think this was a good television match, a strong win, ultimately. Like, they at least went with the finish. If you were going to do the reveal of the Dominic surprise, then it was still for a Santos 1-2-3 win. It wasn't for like a DQ and a beatdown or something. So I think it had that over something like Bailey and Dakota from the week before. Mm. Like, they've actually given you finish here. Santos can, you know, do what we expect him to do and suggest, oh, well, that was easy. I did exactly what I said I was going to do. I've replaced you. I'm better than you, all that kind of thing. And Dominic's involvement drags everybody else back into it. And we get an announcement of something probably on this Friday, SmackDown. So yeah, as much as I enjoyed this and I thought the chemistry was decent, I don't think it left a lot. It, you know, we talk about this all the time with match quality is what it is now, that like you've got to, there's a certain minimum level to even be memorable. And I don't think this was that, but the finish was, the booking was, and the direction feels like it will be. And a big multi-man, certainly if it is like a 4-on-4 or a 5-on-5, the type of which we speculated for a while, that is already more preferable than a Last Street Kids Mega Glove thing they've been laboring over for, like, including on this episode, laboring over for like 2 months.
Mm.
So, like, I think we're already in a hotter place for this multi-man match, this gang match, potentially, if that's what they're going to do.
Yes, to quote the late great Captain Holt on Brooklyn Nine-Nine, vindication!
Most
I enjoyed this match, but I thought, oh yeah, this would have not, like, got the reaction it deserves on a WrestleMania, because you've got, you know, such huge matches,
yeah,
grudge feuds of like Bailey versus EO and Jimmy versus Jay and stuff. And I'm really invested in this. I really like the way they've laid out this story over the last few months, but it would have just kind of, yeah, faded into the background. And would he be one of those things? Oh, yeah, they had that Rey Santos match at WrestleMania 40. I think a multi-man is far preferable. Right now, I think that means the numbers are even, if my maths is correct. You know, you've got Zelina cancelling out Electra Lopez. You've got Rey and Santos. You've got Angel and Umberto cancelling out Joaquin Wilde and Cruz del Toro, and potentially now Dominic cancelling out Carlito.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that both teams should say, and we're going to have a fifth member, but you'll have to watch at WrestleMania for them to be revealed. You get Dominic palling up to Andrade, who decides after this, yeah, no, this isn't for me, teaming with this bunch of losers. Yeah. And you get, we're doing the Bad Bunny thing.
Yeah,
but yeah, love this opening and another kind of prediction for the two of us.
Tick.
So we get a recap of what's been going on with Bayley and Damage Control after this, and we go backstage and Bayley's meeting up with Naomi, stretching out ahead of her match. Basically, Bayley thanks Naomi for helping her out, or at least attempting to save her last week. When Bianca Belair shows up and goes, yeah, look, I don't know why anyone's giving you any sympathy, basically. You were a part of this for the last 2 years. You're not sorry. You're getting everything you deserve. And they get into a shouting match of Bayley being like, look, I know I can't just completely, you know, disassociate myself from all this, but I'm trying to make things better. Bianca Belair doesn't want to hear it. They get into a bit of a row. Naomi walks Belair away. And immediately following that, after a commercial break, you see Cody signing posters backstage, and Naomi and Belair are arguing still, or at least Naomi's trying to calm down Bianca, I should say. And Naomi's basically saying, look, I get it. Everything you say is valid, but there's nothing we can do about it now. You know, at least she's trying, I suppose.
I really, really like this Bianca Belair ingredient for the Bayley heel story. I know, like, that we can infer another match that may be added. I say infer, we called it again for about 3 months.
Ugh.
We can potentially see, based on some events elsewhere on this broadcast, that there may be another match forthcoming to do with this directly featuring Bianca Belair. But I sort of made this point last week. Bianca Belair getting to be the avatar for the members of the audience that aren't yet quite back in Bayley's camp, I think, is very useful. I think this is them. I don't know if it's a retcon, but I think, like, the turn was a little premature, and like the timing of it just never really sat right with me. And Belair, I think, has been the difference maker in making this feel a bit more real, especially with how they folded in Bayley not really being able to, like, pay it back.
Yeah, I love it.
Which I think is a nice touch as well. I think they're applying thought at the right time to this. I never know if Bayley and Io is going to get there. I think that's one of the ones I think, like, the night and the universe will determine that match. Sometimes these things just come together and it's just magic. And then there are other nights where just you kind of have this feeling in your gut, it's just not going to be their night. And I think we won't know until about 5 to 7 minutes in to Bayley and Io if it's worked. But this Bianca element of it is by far the most interesting I've been.
I'm a simple man. I want three things from that match. Number one, Paramore for you. Yeah. Number two, Bayley buddies for, well, everybody.
Yeah.
And number three, just to, like, super Bayley to belly off the top rope to finish it.
That's all.
Goes up for the over the moon salt. Caught Bayley to belly off the top. 1, 2, 3. Job's a good un.
It would be nice, wouldn't it?
Mm. Then Izzy comes in and attacks her. When we get, that's your feud.
That's your backlash match, yeah.
We also had WrestleMania qualifiers, sort of, because they have to do the finals of it next week on this show. And as I was watching it, I suddenly thought, oh, this actually, for me sitting there going, kind of something to nothing. I was watching this going, oh, no, this makes a lot more sense, actually, as we go through it. It was the OC, it was Gallows and Anderson, with Meechin coming out with them, against A-Tay and Deonander, Grayson Bloody Waller and Austin Theory. I was watching this thinking, because I paid a slight attention to, you know, the 2K ratings.
Yeah.
Not that it matters to anyone or should, but I was like, do you think Austin Theory's a bit pissed off that Grayson Waller's already got a better rating than he does?
I noticed that as well. And I think I'd seen it in, like, It must have been another one of their tag matches because I feel like I'd seen them together at the same time. And there's only one or two in it, isn't there?
Yeah.
Like, it stuck out to me too. Because again, seeing all of them, I get why they do it. And it's a nice bit of corporate synergy. But like, none of them are very high. So you're like, yeah. Anyway, this match is four suck asses.
Yeah. Logan Paul, if you put all their scores together, they just about reach what Logan Paul's yeah. got. But I got glimpses that whisper it. Bright lights Carl Anderson in this match.
A touch, yeah. I don't know. Like, I never want to sort of stick my neck out and be like, guys, Carl Anderson's back, actually. Yeah. Because he would, like, love the guy. Well, I love the guy for what he doesn't do rather than he does. To say he's back suggests that he was there for an extended period of time. We're talking like a decade and change ago in like a G1 in a totally different context, like a tag team in a totally different time frame. Like 12 years is like, you know, we use The Rock and Austin as like time frames. Mm. That's virtually The Rock plus Austin ago. You know? Like it's okay for guys to have a period rather than be this sort of like long dormant whatever. I like this match more than I thought I would.
Mm.
I think I've enjoyed this tag tournament more than I thought I would. Feel like the whole thing, I didn't imagine qualifiers and it were a multi-man ladder match that I didn't even really like on paper would have me that drawn in. Yeah. But I think I've bought into the place on the WrestleMania card because the places are limited and should feel limited.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think they'll be. Maybe they will because they want a couple more matches, but I'm getting the impression there's not going to be an Andre the Giant match. And
maybe not, yeah.
Like, certainly not one that's not going to be on, like, the SmackDown before Mania
yeah,
or whatever.
Yeah.
And, like, the card is starting to have status again.
That's huge this year, yeah.
You can see a wrestler, like, be in that stadium. They've had to at least justify their place. And we went so many years where that wasn't really the case.
Mm. Yeah, that's fair.
Like, these are guys that are, what's the American sports term, where they're, like, on the bubble or whatever it is.
Mm.
A lot of these tag teams are on the bubble. And, like, then you see a team like the Creeds where you're like, ah, I kind of want them to make it, and they haven't. That hurts, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm applying that to all of these matches. It's the work's just the work, but the ramifications feel real.
And like you say, with the remaining cast of people, if you were going to do a battle royal, you could still have a load of fun with it. You know, you got Ricochet arguably popping up there. The Creeds could do some unbelievable spots if they're not going to be utilized in the tag match. Look, it's worked out really well, like you say. In the match, as I say, though, Gallows was chucking Theory around early on, and then Anderson comes in and does a big splash onto the heels on the outside to take us to a break. We come back from the break and Anderson's hitting a flurry of offense. Everyone's getting spine busters left, right, and center. He also hits a second rope neck breaker on Austin Theory, which looked great. Gallows comes in. They set up for the magic killer. Grayson Waller breaks it all up, though. And Theory, in the end, rolled up Gallows, put his feet on the ropes. And I think Grayson Waller grabbed onto them as well, just to give a bit of extra leverage. Eitan Down Under qualify for the final.
Yeah. Not a lot to say about the match. The OC are in that interesting position at the moment where they've got like skin in the game on two separate brands, apparently. So maybe that's something to why Anderson looked a bit more in the mood. And Gallows wasn't bad. But I was at A-Town Down Under one.
Yeah.
I think for next week, like both of those matches, there's like, they're the best of what SmackDown's tag division has to offer currently. I think I think they're quite hard to call.
Yeah.
Next week. So, yeah, I would have wanted it to turn down to win.
And panic not everyone. I know this week, at least here in the UK, is Good Friday, or in Tony Khan's house, Great Friday. But we will be recording our SmackDown preview early on Thursday. So if they announce anything on Friday, we're absolutely buggered. But we will give you a preview of SmackDown on the usual day on Friday. It'll just have been recorded the day before.
Are we going to have to like put in some request? I don't know who we go through here. We're probably whoever like wrote the Bible, whoever, I don't know who authored that, but like, are we gonna have to go through some people about like renaming Good Friday, because they probably weren't aware when that like religious day was set up that like once we hit like SmackDown 2024, every Friday is Good Friday. It wasn't, they couldn't have been expected to realize that there would one day need to be a separation from but I'm afraid the feds cook so hard now that every Friday is just as good as that one.
I tell you what, speaking of the Fed cooking, we have to talk about what came next, because There was a, and I often say these things, and I, it's sort of relatively dismissive. I say, oh, there's a big hype package on whoever. There was a hype package on this show for Brandbreaker, and it made it feel like the biggest deal you've ever seen. They just threw a load of stats at you of like his running speed or his, I don't know, vertical jump or, you know, the power he generates on his spear or something. They may as well say dick size 2 feet while they're at it because they made him feel like an absolute freak. He is, obviously, and I know he's done like combines and stuff for the football because he was doing all that obviously prior to, to heading to the Fed. But Jesus, he's going to be a megastar, this lad.
This was good stuff, this, wasn't it? Yeah, like, I think what's helped Brandbreaker in this case as well is that at this point, this video isn't, like, it's not, what's the phrase I can't think of? Like, you already know, like, you see all these stats and you can produce anything on anybody, and you know, they always say, like, you can use statistics to prove anything, that kind of thing. But you know, this isn't like all fart and no, you know, like he's wrestled already on the main roster and he's killing guys in these squashes. He's an NXT tag champion and a former NXT champion. So he's been sort of like on the peripheries. If you only watch WWE main roster, you are aware of Brandbreaker. And what you've seen is now backed up by some like fun facts to go alongside it. This is not, here's all this information in an info dump, and we'll see you in 3 weeks. And he's got to back up the platform that you've given him. This is just a fun way to double down on the physical side you've already seen. So I think the timing of this piece is to be commended as well. But yeah, a very strong video package. I don't know. Like, I'm really happy with the Brandbreaker rollout.
Yeah.
On the main roster, but I'm not prepared to say goodbye to the Wolf Dogs.
Yeah.
So I don't know, like Baron Corbin's in between a bit of a rock and hard place at the moment, isn't he? Like, he just must be thinking, oh yeah, like I feel quite proud as a veteran to be able to bid you farewell. Please don't go. Like, it's just,
well, he's gonna be all right because he'll move to the main, back to the main roster, and be the most over he's ever been at Backlash.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, he's got his hometown show, hasn't he? In April, that's true. You're right. I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah, God knows.
This was tremendous. This was really like, I know sometimes people to listen to us in place of watching shows. Like, I would recommend people scout this out if you haven't seen it already, because whatever level you're in with Brandbreaker, whether it's at the top floor because we've been watching him for years, or it's just ground level right now, I feel like this kind of completes the package of how they brought him in so far.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Speaking of levels, let's move on to the guy who is greatness on a different level. I'm talking about Tribal Chief Roman Reigns. We are both acknowledging him on meets right now. And we see footage of him on the Pat McAfee show from earlier on in the day, dismissing what Cody did over there, basically, and saying how he didn't have to go to Hollywood because Hollywood came to him. I really like that as a line. That was some good stuff.
I haven't watched that yet, but I've seen a lot of clipped bits from this. And then, like, I don't want to foreshadow what we're going to talk about, but, like, the sort of display that I think Roman needed as well.
Mm.
But more on that later.
Then we got Naomi versus Io Sky, Outcome Damage Control sans Io. Mm-hmm. And as her music hits, we see that she's beating the crap out of Bailey backstage and then walks out. So Naomi's all on her own, but she puts up a good fight against Sky, good back and forth action. Naomi needed this in terms of, not in terms of her in-ring work, but, like, you know, she's lost to Tiffany Stratton, and it's all going to make sense in terms of if she's doing tag team stuff, so she can lose single stuff. But yeah, just a reminder how great she is in one-on-one action. We got to see that early on. She face plants Sky to take us to commercial. She's got the upper hand as we come back from the break. Hits a crossbody from the top, drop kick, elbow, kick, then hits a split splash, as I'm calling it, for a two count. And I think Wade Barrett said, "Oh, something from your arsenal there, Corey." Sky comes back with a shotgun drop kick, goes up top, but Naomi cuts her off and hits a great superplex for a near fall. Sky comes back with that standing double stomp of hers, draping facebuster from Naomi. But as it looks like Naomi's going to finish this match off, Outcome Damage Control to distract Naomi. That allows Sky to knock her down, hit the over the moonsault and get the 1-2-3. Post-match, they all gang up on Naomi, of course, and beat the crap out of her. She tries to fight back. She gets misted by Asuka. Bianca Belair, though, comes out to make the save, and she takes out all of Damage Control. She gets up, I think it was Kairi Sane, to hit with a finish. But Dakota Kai and Asuka cut her off. The crowd are chanting for Bailey, but she's got her ass handed to her backstage before the match, so no save. Damage Control yet again stand tall.
But the key, as you've just sort of illustrated there, is that the crowd were chanting for Bailey. So I would say mission accomplished in terms of being able to bring these two opposing forces in, her and Bianca, together. Like, WWE had her get injured here, so she couldn't. She has plausible deniability for why she couldn't help her old new friends in Naomi and Bianca Belair. And yet, because she wasn't there to help, that means Bianca's not going to be quick to sort of go, "Oh yeah, we're all fine now." She's going to think, "You could have hobbled yourself out to give us a hand." So that's still, that can stick in Bianca's craw a little bit.
She might indeed Dakota next week as well, or this week.
Yeah. So before they do their big Mega Powers handshake right before WrestleMania or something, that's where that little bit of tension lies. But the fans, at least, are rooting for it. The fans are wanting Bailey now to just permanently align with, like, the forces of good against Damage Control. So this was an effective week for the story. And the match was, I think, to your point, just what Naomi needed.
Yeah.
Like, her work's been fine, if a little unspectacular since coming back, which is less than ideal for a character as spectacular as Naomi. But I think part of that problem is that she was brought back at the Rumble, and in her entrance was a star, and then every other moment since then she's just been completely devoid of purpose. There hasn't been a feud for her. There hasn't really been, like, she was back and forth in with Tiffany Stratton pretty much week one. I'm pretty sure she came out having signed her contract, and, like, they had a hallway bumping into each other. And it's just like, all right, straight back in with the rank and file, nothing special. And this is like a side thing from a WrestleMania title program.
Yeah. So
the fact that she was back in the mix really, like, brought that character back to life, I thought.
And I like the fact her hair reminded me of WWE Fastlane.
Oh, shouldn't have done that.
We get another hype video again that gets me very hyped. This time for Jade Cargill. She's not here to be the next anything. She is a once in a lifetime talent, and she's going to be taking her talents to SmackDown. She's going to be here this week.
And there we go. As we continue to pat ourselves on the back, that could be that little missing piece for this damage control story if they want to do a 3-on-3. But we'll see, I guess. They've teased it in a couple of different ways. So we'll see if that's was just a red herring or whatever. But I'm curious to see where this goes now.
And we also got Naomi washing her eyes from the mist backstage with Bianca. And Tiffany Strato comes back and says, good luck for you. And I was like, ooh.
There's that as well. Yeah.
Kevin Owens goes to meet the SmackDown GM. I forgot what his name is. Talking about his match for Logan Paul when he's interrupted by, I'm going to go further away from the microphone. Yes, boy. Pretty deadly. They say you probably don't know much about tag team wrestling, Kevin, but we want to be involved in the tag team tournament. It's a travesty we're not involved. Kevin Owens is like, I literally won the tag titles in the main event last year, which is very entertaining. And he wants a tag match against them. They don't think he's got any mates. And he says, oh, actually, I've got a pretty good mate who'd make a good team. It's Randy Orton. He says, scares the crap out. I think it was Elton Prince. And Randy does his great shtick that he's got at the moment of like, oh, God, sorry. But I am going to kick your ass. he agrees. The SmackDown GM books it and also warns them that they shouldn't stand so close together. And Owens comes back in. He's left with Randy to punch both of them with one punch. And he's giddy. Randy, I did it again. Good stuff, this.
Yeah, good fun. And then obviously you get a fairly routine win for Orton and Owens to come. But then it's going to be about, oh, look how good they were together. But only one of them can win at WrestleMania. And, you know, maybe the real challenge here is not like making this Logan Paul triple threat interesting, but seeing if one of Pretty Deadly can do a better job with the RKO stunner combo finisher than Austin Theory did. Challenge laid down.
I'd love it if Pretty Deadly started aligning themselves with Logan Paul, though. That is a stable I'd be 100% here for.
Is there a way? Oh, Elton Prime. Anything else in that? I don't know. I feel a bit too...
We'll come back to it on the SmackDown preview on Friday.
I know when I'm not my best self, because if I'm too lethargic for wordplay, I'm too lethargic for life. Right?
Then we see footage. They sent a camera crew to the Styles household to record his thoughts ahead of the match with LA Knight at WrestleMania. He barely gets a second into talking about his preparations for WrestleMania when we hear, there's a car honking its horn outside. Who could that be? AJ Styles comes outside and there's LA Knight, who's just there to kick his ass, apparently. They get into a massive fight on the front garden. The police show up. Wendy Styles is there going, what's going on? And LA Knight gets arrested. AJ Styles very nearly gets arrested as well. We are told, though, AJ declined to press charges, but LA Knight has promised he will take out AJ. I tell you what, this was a load of bollocks, but I loved it.
Yeah, this really worked for me, right? I've tried to articulate, and I think I've got the point across. When we do our Raw coverage, I've tried to sort of make my argument as to why, like, Awesome Truth potentially winning the tag belts isn't really that wild a take if you look up and down WrestleMania as a card. But even my sort of generosity didn't really stretch to AJ Styles versus LA Knight. I was like, I get it. It's not that they haven't done the work. It's not that they haven't had these two paired off pretty much since AJ returned, but I'm never going to feel invested. And this felt like it was telling me, for the want of a better phrase, Wilborn, it was telling me to snap into it. Like, when you really lay all this out, other than AJ Styles' super serious big jacket return.
His arms are massive as well on that before when he was in his gym.
He's frigging bigger than ever, man. Like, wasn't that the premise was that the reason we were even watching it was because he was filming like a fitness documentary or something.
Something like that, yeah.
Rebuilding AJ Styles or whatever. Which is, by the way, like, they're copying AEW's homework there, but that's for the better. So none of this was even invisible camera, despite the preposterous lengths they went to get that across. Fitness documentary, police footage.
I like the idea of LA Knight with a cup just at the front door waiting to hear when he starts recording. Right, now it's time to start honking the horn.
This is the thing, right? They both work, in theory, at the same place. I appreciate that, like, they might not do the exact same house shows, but they're both SmackDown superstars. So an absolute minimum, Fridays they're going to see each other. They're probably going to see each other making the same towns. And yet, for whatever reason, it's always like, oh, I'm not booked to fly to Australia, but I'll do it anyway to get you. You're not at the building because you're filming a fitness thing in your house. I'll come to your frigging house then. I'm finding how increasingly dumb their gestures are to want to fight each other to make me think that this match is going to end up being like dumb. And I mean that in the best way. Like, if this, I don't know what, I can't work out how it's dumb, but I just sort of feel as though if this is just them in the gear and then they lock up and then we have like hold counter hold for the first 5 minutes, you've gone really wrong.
Yeah.
Because this has gotten really daft and I get it now and I didn't get it before. So like just freaking LA Knight with that horn, man. Like, what the hell is that? Like, I love it now. I understand the tone of the feud in a way that I didn't before. And I just hope they've got something creative for the match to back this up.
I've got a really good idea for this match. I'm going to save it for the SmackDown preview.
Oh, okay.
Stick around.
Well, like already, I think people understand that the last one before WrestleMania is a big one. But it's like WWE with a card. We're just stickety stacking it up. Mm-hmm.
We got AOP versus Street Profits, the other side of the WrestleMania qualifier bracket thing, to see who faces A10 Dan Ander next week. Early on, AOP dominate. Angelo Dawkins Ford comes in and gets the team back on top until I think he went for a splash on the outside and AOP caught him and threw him into Dawkins, who was also flying off the steps at the same time, which did look great to take us to break. We come back, AOP still in control. Ford is getting battered. He finally escapes, leaps over to his corner and gets the hot tag. And in this moment, I watched this and thought, Angelo Dawkins is going to be fine if they do Montez Ford as a single star, because he looked amazing here, just running wild, cleaning house for the Street Profits. Hits a DDT on Akam, brings Ford back in, but AOP managed to take over, having like... AOP had got out of like a doomsday device or whatever it may be. They hit the final chapter on Montez Ford. And in that split second, I thought, oh, we're going to do AOP. I bought it as the finish. We're going to do AOP versus A-Town Down Under next week. But no, Dawkins jumps in very much at the last second to make the save. Ford gets out of the powerbomb neckbreaker combination. Small packages, Rezar. 1, 2, 3. The Street Profits defeat AOP.
Yeah. I think it would be unfair to like brush aside how good the Street Profits were here.
Oh, yeah.
But there was no way to shake off the feeling, and it used to be a lot more familiar. And I'm glad I don't have this feeling very much now. Do you remember when, well, all of this was bad, right? when all of WWE was bad, basically. And how often would we see wrestlers, especially on the PLEs, like trying to wrestle their way out of bad booking,
yeah,
and like just force noise or force something that when they got backstage, that stupid old fart at the desk might have paid attention to it and thought, oh, you know what I've been doing with them is terrible. I wonder if I can do something then that isn't terrible, and then inevitably the thing would be terrible again. But the wrestlers were left with no other option but to perform as if their careers depended on it. And I don't think for a second that in this incarnation of WWE, an act like the Street Profits are wrestling as if their careers depend on it. But they are certainly wrestling as if their current run depends on it. Like, did you find, you know, when they were like celebrating with Bobby Lashley, like there was no, like the act as a group is zero steps further forward than they were.
Yeah.
Like, is it fair to say the biggest beneficiary of the Last Street Kids is BFAP.
Without question.
Like, and I'm not trying to say that as a huge X in the box, but like that was basically because she was pretty much on the chopping block with Hit Row.
Yeah, yeah.
He had three wrestlers that were already independently over in Bobby Lashley and the Profits, and they're less over. And for like, what, how long was this? 4 minutes?
Thereabouts. 8 minutes, but it was cut in half by the
tore a lot of the action to bits. For what we got here of action time, the Street Profits maximized the seconds, let alone the minutes. He pointed out Angelo Dawkins. He, in particular for me, often when the Street Profits feel like they're being creatively ignored, it's Dawkins that really, really flings himself into stuff.
I got a bit of the WrestleMania showcase vibes as well, yeah. Running around the outside.
And I think he knows deep down that Ford can go from like 1 yeah. to 11 in a second. And he's like, well, I got to keep up with that then. I got to keep pace. But I was just like, I can't call it next week. Like Street eight out down under are in a much better spot at the moment, but maybe that's all the more reason that Street Profits win.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
But yeah, big matches next week. Jake Cargill's debut, Randy Orton and Kevin Owens against Pretty Deadly, Street Profits versus eight town down under, Dakota Kai, Bianca Belair, and of course New Catch Republic versus Legado del Fantasma. Stacked show on Friday.
I still don't want the Mega Glove Last Street Kids payoff at WrestleMania.
No, I'll take that because I want to go to the bar. So
right, okay, yeah, good point.
It was going to be immediately after LA Knight's entrance.
Yeah,
I was going to do LA Knight. Yeah, right, lads, pints. but now I want to watch that match. You've sold me on it, and they have as well. So yeah, I need something in there, and there's nothing right now. So
quite well made. We're arranging this card not just for our own taste, but for the benefit of the crowd. Mm. Yeah.
Hamblet, before we get to the main event, you sound probably like the majority of the Chesterfield FC squad feel right yes. now. Yes. What with, I'm not sure if we've mentioned this on the podcast, it's kind of gone very under the radar. Mm. But Chesterfield FC, my team, my beloved Spyrites. And yes, Hamblet, I mentioned this on the news, I am wearing the same shirt I wore on Friday. And on Saturday and on Sunday, because the Spyrites are National League champions, ladies and gentlemen. 100 goals we've scored this season, 95 points. We lifted the title 10 months and 10 days after the heartbreak of the playoff final defeat to Notts County. And here is a fact for you, Michael Hamblet. No team has ever lost the playoff final and won the league the following season. No team, that is, until Chesterfield FC came along and did it. What a day Saturday was. But that was kind of my feel-good moment, and I'd like to now give you, Michael Hamblet, a feel-good moment, courtesy of birthday boy himself, James Rice. G'day, Cobber, to you. He sent me an email early on last week, and I've kept a little bit of a secret from you, but I have something here in my hands, Michael Hamblet, that you don't know anything about.
No.
Accompanied by a lovely email from James. And James, thank you so much for that, and happy 39th birthday from all of you.
Happy birthday, James.
He writes, G'day, Cobber. He sent something through the post that I'll get to in a second.
Okay.
He also sent some photos on his weekend walk along the Murray River. No relation to Andy Murray of this parish, of course.
Yeah.
Now, when you see these, you will know that this looks rather familiar because it's the site.
Yeah.
Of the kangaroo kidnapping a dog video.
I would go as far as say, like, I know that on the SmackDown coverage, both preview and review, we are guilty of the odd, very occasional diversion away from pro wrestling. Like, once in a blue moon, we'll talk about something else. Maybe my all-time favourite is that jacked kangaroo trying to kill that dog. I don't know if it's the flex when he's challenged. I don't know if it's the owner of the dog speaking to him like he's a human in a pub fight. I don't know if it's the way that the camera pans to find the kangaroo caught red-handed holding the duck, but it makes me laugh every time.
Me too. So he's got photos from that, but
oh, great stuff. I hope he didn't go in that river, because I am not. I don't want to mess with that guy.
He also says, "I'm keen as mustard to see you blokes at All In. Hopefully, get to a live show. Hopefully, we'll meet up with you, James." Yeah, he sent this. I'm going to open it up for you now, and then I'll make sure it's kept in a safe place on your desk. So it's come all the way from Australia. Mm-hmm. You might have put together what this is. Oh, have we got a... Oh, there's even a little letter for you here. I won't read that now.
Oh, amazing.
I'll save that for you. But the main present. Oh, look at that.
Oh, yeah. Look at that. Oh, my God.
So it's a booklet from Elimination Chamber, basically.
Oh, get in. James, that's amazing.
That wall of yours is going to be decorated. Yeah. Whoa.
That is absolutely, what a generous thing to do as well. Those are not cheap.
Oh, look at the back page. Look who's on the back page.
Oh, God. Thank you, James, for opening the door. Right. Adam Wilde want to show me a page from this right now over Skype, and I'm going to use the last bits of my vocal cord before I take a break when he recaps the main event segment to do this, because I won't get a chance to do it otherwise. Friggin' CM Punk is on goddamn Raw tonight in Chicago. It's going to look like the Survivor Series because they've sold tickets out the goddamn ass that there's no space for the Titantron, right? He's put a post on... tell them what you just showed me, Wilbon.
There's a full bam. If you're gonna, I'm not saying you should necessarily destroy the official program for the Elimination Chamber, but if you were gonna cut out some photos, shotgun the Titus O'Neil one.
That is all yours.
There's one of the SmackDown GM. I forget what his name is, but
it's written down there. If anyone can remember it or learn to read. CM Punk on Raw tonight, and I won't be able to preview it with you and Sitch. So I'll try and keep it succinct as much as I can when I'm talking about the Punker. I'm mega super duper excited of how he's going to insert himself in WrestleMania, but not just WrestleMania, WrestleMania weekend. Did you see the post on Instagram where he dug out three bits of old WrestleMania gear?
Yes.
I happen to have read, I think, that he's doing like a panel at, you know, that WWE World deal.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if he's going to be donating his attire to like some sort of CM Punk WrestleMania history artifact or something like that.
Yeah.
So I might have to get a ticket to that now as well, while I'm over there anyway.
James, this is unbelievable, this.
I can't wait to have a look at that. Thank you so much, James.
I better hide this, because if anyone else in the office gets a look at this, you ain't getting it. By the time you come back in the office, it looks mysteriously lost.
Oh, that's awesome.
Oh, there's even a bloody message from the Honourable Rita Saffioti, MLA, Deputy Premier and Minister of Tourism. Tourism. Welcome, everybody. Anyway, thank you, James, for this.
Thank you so much for that, James. And I don't know if you're... Does James say what part of Australia he's from?
I'm going to say it, and I hope this doesn't get us into any trouble, because at the beginning of his lovely letter to you, he says... Please find enclosed the Elimination Chamber program is an expression of my appreciation for the hours of free content you guys have supplied over the 5 years I've been listening. I recently attended the Elimination Chamber, Pete, driving 4 hours from Medora to Red Adelaide. He didn't say that, he said Adelaide, but yeah. I love calling it that. Driving 4 hours from Mildura to Adelaide before flying 3 hours to Perth.
Wow.
Mildura is the home of the dog versus kangaroo.
Mildura. Fair play to James, though, because I don't know much. Well, I didn't before Elimination Chamber, but having seen the wonderful tourism options available about going to Western Australia through a series of excellent video packages that gave me a nice breather from the perfectly booked pro wrestling matches that also filled the PLE, I too would make the kind of trip James did.
Yeah.
So it was time and money well spent, obviously.
Now we just have to get to the main event of SmackDown.
Yeah.
We had, before Roman made his entrance when we went to another break. Heyman's calling Roman to say that Cody's here alone and the public awaits, my tribal chief. So Roman comes out first and does not say Milwaukee. Go Bucks, by the way. There was a nice thing with like a big trophy cap. Go Bucks, and Janice and all that. He doesn't say Milwaukee, acknowledge me. He instead says Paul Heyman made a promise and the tribal chief keeps his word. He's a man of his word. He's here alone except for Paul Heyman, who's no physical threat, as you may have seen with the clip that did the rounds on social media of Paul Heyman attempting to get involved, I assume, in the post-show dark match with the Usos and Roman and stuff, and them all keeping it very light, presumably, ahead of WrestleMania. He says, though, Cody, come out here, join Milwaukee, and acknowledge me. And Cody's walking through the back and stick around because after this break, he's going to be coming out. And he does come out. And oh boy, does he get a huge baby? Roman gets him in the ring, gets on the mic, and says, hey, Cody, I kept my word. I'm alone, but are you? And Cody, possibly a sign of things to come, says, I'm as much as a man of my word as you are, Roman. So if you're alone, then I am too. And I thought, are we actually getting a smart baby face here?
Yeah, nice, isn't it?
And Roman immediately goes, you're a fool. You're a stupid man, an idiot who is unfit to be the face of the company because you fall for all these kind of things, basically. Mm-hmm. You've aligned yourself with my little brother, Seth Rollins, and that leads to all kinds of problems, a bit like on Monday where Seth wasn't there for Cody. That's Seth showing his true colors. No one knows Seth better than Roman. They were in the Shield, and he was offered as a Shield. They had this bond. Roman thought they were family, and then Seth stabbed him in the back. What do you think is going to happen to Cody? And Cody says, yeah, you know what? I do remember the Shield. They were this great team, this unstoppable force. Can you remember who were the first team to beat the Shield? I'll give you a clue. Their last name were Rhodes. Another great.
Sorry, I'm going to have to intervene there, Wilborn. Just to put my glasses on to illustrate the point to you, and you can illustrate it to the listeners because I can barely speak now.
All right, Speggy.
Actually, I think you'll find it was Daniel Bryan and Kane and Randy Orton that were the first team to beat the Shield. But Mr. Rhodes could have suggested who were the first team to dethrone the Shield as tag team champions.
Yes.
Their surname ended in Rhodes, but he did not. The mistake was noted, and thus the promo was ruined. That's what people are next told me.
Idiots. But I liked it. Another Papa H cooking in terms of just linking in their history. Mm-hmm. Speaking of history, Cody Rhodes referenced the Bullet Club again and get no pap. He's wearing his cufflinks. He's done this before with that smash in the throne. No one apparently cares in the WWE audience about his history.
Happened with them, remember, like Punk saying, like, I gotta stop knocking out people I work with or something like that. And it was just, I move on. Like, say something about Seth Rollins.
Yeah. But he says, look, Bloodline isn't a faction, it's family. He asks the fans if he thinks they think he can trust Seth. And they seem to think so. But can Roman trust The Rock? What's going on with the Bloodline? You know, who's the leader? Is it the tribal chief or is the final boss really in charge? And Roman's like, here we go, Cody, typical politician. What, are you running for governor or something? You know, that's what you do. Like every politician, you promise and you never deliver. And that's because you're second best. You're the best number two. Boo. You're the best number two ever. But you will never take my spot. I am number one forever. Number one, I suppose, a bit like Chesterfield, who literally can't be caught as the leaders of the National League, despite the fact it's March. What? We've already lifted the trophy and it's only March.
How is that even possible?
Okay. Greatness echoes greatness, and Paul Cook has got greatness in that team. I'm talking Jamie Grimes stepping up with two goals on Saturday. I'm talking Will Grigg. Look out, everyone. He's on fire. He's injured right now, but he's on fire. Armando Dobra, Liam Mandeville, I could sit. Ryan Colclough, Harry Tyra. I'm getting off topic here.
No, I get it. I get it, right? Because in terms of, like, you know, if you look at Chesterfield as a sporting outfit at the moment, like, as you pointed out, they are the ones in a very literal sense. They have shown as a team calibration, actuation. It's like been engineered unlike anywhere else in the UK. And in terms of the National League, they are indeed market leaders, much like lean gate valves. So,
you know, my dad started offering more money to people he sits with at the time so they can get their ticket on the final day of the season.
So, you know, if you want
9,907 fans for a National League game, that's what we got on Saturday.
If you want valve wholesalers that lead the charge as effortlessly as Chesterfield, it's got to be Lee Ingate.
As we've said, Lee Pickering of Lee Ingate Valves. If you got his tickets going spare, you know where we are. Anyway,
should do a podcast on it. We'll do the SmackDown review live from the Chesterfield ground.
Yeah. No, I promise I'll stop talking about Chesterfield. Well, I probably won't for a while because we've been in the doldrums for 6 years. But
yeah, people have signed up.
Thank you everyone for their lovely tweets, by the way, over the weekend about this.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, Cody says.
It's the biggest match of WrestleMania, maybe the biggest.
Yeah. But we can finish our story. Can Cody finish his? Roman says he's number one forever, basically. Cody's like, come on, let's get real here. Let's talk about the biggest wrestling stars of all time. He's talking about, you know, The Rock, Austin, John Cena, Flair, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And he says, look, I've come to the realization that for the next generation of wrestlers, people will probably want to emulate Roman Reigns. That's his destiny. But Roman needed to be reminded about Cody's destiny, because when it comes to WrestleMania, to who beats Roman for that belt after so many days, Cody says, I'm not number two, I'm the one, which I thought was a phenomenal line. Mm-hmm. Cody offers the handshake, but Roman declines. He's like, I'm not shaking your hand. He'll shake Paul Heyman's hand because he's a bell end, and he'll contemplate doing it. And then, no, I'll run this show. And he steps out of the ring and he stands on the ramp, snaps his fingers, his music plays, but that's also a sign for Solo Sikoa and Jimmy Uso to reveal themselves, because of course Roman Reigns hasn't come alone. And they come through the crowd and they climb the barricade and they encircle Cody Rhodes, who's in the ring, and realizes, wait a second, there's a double cross. But Cody Rhodes is not a stupid babyface. He has outsmarted the tribal chief, because Cody just smiles and nods, and suddenly there's Jey Uso in the crowd in a hoodie. There's Seth Rollins in the crowd in disguise. And they come through the crowd just as Jimmy and Solo has done. And they flank Cody. And we get a brilliant stare down to close out the show. Not the fireworks we were hoping for, I think it's fair to say. But what did you make of all this?
Yeah, I don't know. Is the honest answer, and I still don't know. I watched it a couple of times. There were a couple of moments in this where Roman made a couple of choices that reminded you of him doing that on a, I don't want to say a weekly basis because he wasn't there every week, but every time he turned up in, like, I think what most people consider like the height of the Bloodline saga. Mm-hmm. Like, point at which Sami Zayn was on the cusp of turning, but yet to turn. Roman was making certain acting choices with his body language, with his facials, with his cadence, with like what kind of base he put behind certain words that were just elevating all of this. Like, that were really putting all of this on that different level that he has on that old t-shirt of his. And I didn't get a lot of that here. And one of the only times I did you see at the very end when the stare down was happening and he was, and I thought this was a really cool choice. He refused to make eye contact with Seth Rollins. And I think that's rooted in this like quite long story that they've got. Remember when them two feuded and Rollins got in his head by being a Shield guy again?
Mm-hmm.
And Roman, as he could tell by this promo, is still affected by the fact that Seth turned on him all those years ago. Roman instead looked directly at Jay the whole time. And Roman was wearing that new shirt of his that says, like, family above all.
Mm.
And he was, like, pulling on the shirt, eyeballing Jay, as if to try, as, like, a last desperate gasp, whilst looking like he's some, like, psychological puppet master, but is, in fact, pretty desperate at this point. Trying to eyeball him and, like, mind control him one last time to be like, come on, you're with them. And he just wouldn't look at Seth. Now, we can say all the clown stuff and he can try and neg him in the same way that The Rock negs him. But I think there's quite a nice bit of character work there on Roman Reigns' part. And I want to commend him for that. Because if I'm being honest, he didn't really bring it to the rest of the segment for me. I can't work out if the content was just a bit too flimsy. And as a result, Roman just didn't, like, couldn't find the right point to put his back into it. There was no, like, there was no killer line where it's like, right, these guys have done promos like this in their sleep. Like, Roman Reigns has done it for, like, I would say the majority of these four-year run. When he's been in a story that he's invested in, the promo will build and build and build. And then that one last line is what he saved everything up for. Cody's doing it on a weekly basis, like, on his own a lot of the time. He's done every version of it. He's done it by himself. He's done it with four of them in the ring. He's done it with Seth in the ring. Like, there's not a version of this that Cody can't manage. So that's never been in doubt. So you have to then turn your attention back to Roman Reigns. And the conclusion I was drawing watching this was, without a killer line, he's not elevating the other material to feel like it's killer material. And then your brain goes back to, well, is it just because he's not as big a killer in the jungle as the other killer in the jungle? Mm. And is that not the problem that has sort of been the ghost at the feast with this Rock involvement the whole time? I'm with you on one key element of this. So I'll say it before you do anyway, because I don't want the listeners to misunderstand me. I think the night one tag match is as integral to the build of night two as anything that happens on TV. I think people that think that the singles title match is not being effectively built are missing that a bit. Like,
they did all the work to build it last year. That's like, watching this made me really relieved, actually, that they are doing what they're doing with this. I know it's a pivot and what have you. They never planned this initially, but this was underwhelming, like you say, or it didn't have the big bombastic moment that people were hoping for. And who knows, maybe we'll get that on the go-home SmackDown or next week's SmackDown, or this week's, I should say, because we've only got two more, haven't we? But for me, this just made me relieved that, can you imagine, we've had like 8 weeks of this sort of back and forth between the two. The match is made. The match was made the moment he got Samoan spiked in the main event of last year. He just needed a way to get there. And I think, it's more important, like you say, to sell the tag match. And then you go after that, oh God, what happens now on night two?
Yeah. And because the thing is, right, they're like, finish the story. Cody himself has said he's kind of sick of the term now, because he feels like it's an anchor until he can actually do it. But the story, you were watching the story being told on this SmackDown. Roman's a beaten man.
Mm.
Like, I'm seeing more posts on X from either people with Roman in their avatar or people that actively don't really like WWE. And those are the only two subsets of the fan base that either want Roman Reigns to win or are trying to find storyline ways in which he should.
Mm.
You know, like this time last year, and like, ultimately, I still don't think it was worth it, but like, a lot of people were saying, oh, you've got to get to the Jey Uso match.
Mm-hmm.
Got to pass 1,000 days. Whatever the reasons people were coming up with, I thought they were flawed then, but look at what happened. We went and we had the Jey Uso match. We did pass 1,000 days. All those things eventually happened. Now, the pitches for Roman to retain don't carry any weight.
No.
None of them. Not even beating Hogan's record. None of them.
It all involves like a Priest cash-in or a Jay switching sides or
like a daft one where the SmackDown GM, can't remember his name, said, oh, I've never forgot what happened at All In. I'm going to cost you your big moment. Rubbish. Like, and then there's people that just don't like WWE that say that'd be funny.
Yeah.
Those are the two, like that kind of like that fedge lords, you know? Like, those are the two sides of the people that forecast, not even forecasting, but just talking about a Roman win. Nobody watching with any investment in what the story now is. Feels it, wants it, thinks it, any of it. And maybe that was the problem here, in that Roman not only was, you already have it in your head that he's losing. When he doesn't have anything, he's not armed with anything that convinces you that he's not going to lose. This, as a result, doesn't really feel like it's got the depth of some of the other stuff they've done. On the night, because I've become more and more convinced the Bloodline will win on night one.
Yeah.
On the night, when there is nothing left, all done bar the shouting, and we are down to one match, two men, Cody Rhodes and Roman Reigns, I have not a single doubt in the world that this will be every bit as big as everybody has forecast. Enormous. The single biggest destination in all of pro wrestling in 2024 will be the moment that bell rings for that main event. Not a doubt in my mind. Forget The Rock. Forget any other things. Forget how predictable it might be about Cody winning. That right there is what you watch wrestling for, WWE for. The biggest good guy, the biggest bad guy, the biggest ramification, the biggest title, the biggest stake. End of the world stuff. Like, absolutely end of the world. Massive. I cannot overstate how big it's going to be. The problem they have is almost, it's almost too big for Roman Reigns to sell you on it being another night at work to him. That's what he was trying to do. He's trying to normalize how big that's going to be as a way to be like, yeah, whatever, Cody. I just don't buy it.
Yeah.
I do not buy it, and I don't think Roman buys it, and I don't think the fans bought it. And Cody can't have the wobble like he did last year when they met head-to-head, because he has main evented, and he was soulless to go a thumb away from getting it done. And I just think only the tag match can shift the balance of power temporarily. A promo can't do that.
Yeah, exactly. But I just can't wait now. I can't believe we're so close to it. Counting
right, just really quickly, sorry, and I've droned on, and I'm the one that supposedly can't speak. It was a promo. Bizarrely, I still found it to be an effective bit of promotion.
Yes.
Seeing them together, I didn't think it was a good night for Roman Reigns, and I just thought Cody was Cody. I am exactly the same amount excited as I was. So whether or not that's just my own biases, whether or not that's just because the match is the match is the match and nothing can get in the way of it. But all I did was look at my diary for the umpteenth time that week and count the days again to make sure that my count was correct. I didn't watch this being like, oh, well, the main event's dead. Like, I just don't think, again, I don't think anybody in good faith is watching these and thinking, oh, yeah, that's really damaged my anticipation. It's massive.
Just nice to have a smart baby face as well. He's not like, oh, I love the tease of it as well, of like, I'm as much of a man of my word as you are. I know exactly what I'm dealing with this year. I'll give you this.
And, you know, like, they are telling you that as well, because they need you to know for the match too, don't they?
Exactly.
Like, Bloodline rules or not, they need you to know that.
Like, yeah, Bloodline rules. That means anyone can get involved. Well, there's quite a few people who qualify that get their hands on their Bloodline from the past couple of years. So, yeah, exactly. Right. Well, let us know your thoughts on SmackDown on at What Culture WWE. What I say, you can follow both of us. You can follow Michael Hamflett at
Michael Hamflett.
You can follow me at Adam Wilborn. Follow us all at What Culture WWE. As I said, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts. Me and Sid are doing a live WrestleMania themed Q&A later on today on the What Culture Wrestling Podcast YouTube channel. That will be out later on today as well. And me and Sid, you're going to be looking ahead to Monday Night Raw a little bit later on today as well. Please send your well wishes to Michael Hamflett. Get well soon. We are only 9 days away from flying to WrestleMania. Very excited to be covering all of that. But for now, this has been the SmackDown review. My thanks to Michael Hamflett. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you soon.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.